As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is The Athletic's dedicated Blue Jackets podcast here in Portland with you on a Thursday afternoon. We are 26 hours from the NHL trade deadline. Doesn't look like the Blue Jackets are going to be big players, but, you know, who knows? And I think the player most likely to move, as we wrote today, there's a story on the Athletic website sort of looking at what we the read of the situation from now. Of course, it can all change with one phone call. The most likely to go is probably Jack Roslovic, a unrestricted free agent. He's kind of been squeezed out of the top six from some of the young by some of the younger players here. I don't really see a spot for him if they keep this young group together with forwards. If you think about the young players that they've accumulated and those that are on the way. So spoke with Jack today. Seems to be in a pretty good mood about it. He's thinking about it, of course, but I don't think he could, I don't think it's affected his game. It sure hasn't looked like it. but. I think the sense, too, is even if he doesn't move at this trade deadline, I would say it's very unlikely he's back this summer. So maybe that helps, you know, helps you deal with it because it's not like he's got remaining term and thinks he's here for the long haul. So we can talk about that. I don't think Elvis moves. I think there's just, first of all, goalie trades in the middle of the season can be dicey, can be difficult. They're actually pretty rare. And I think there's probably three or four goalies available that would have to move before Elvis does. But who knows? If the market for those goalies dries up or if their teams are seen as being unreasonable and somebody gets desperate, these are the things that can come to pass on a trade deadline. You hear a Corrali talk. I think players like him are always in demand. He has 1 year left on his contract, fourth line center, good faceoff guy, good penalty kill guy, good dressing room guy. I don't think it's out of the question that there should be interest there. I think Corrali falls under this sort of heading. Interim GM John Davidson, I don't think is going to make, he's even said as much, a big move, sort of substantive foundational moves. He's going to allow the new GM to do that. And that's the process that they'll get started on after the trade deadline passes. My sense is next week is when they'll really start to whittle names and perhaps start to interview people. I don't think he's going to change the makeup of the room. I think UFA, the only significant one is Jack Roslovic, are obvious targets. I do think if they got the right offer for Merzlikins, they would make a move. He's already said he's not trading Boone. I think Corrali would be tough for him to trade. Not out of the question. I know there's been talk about Texier. Not sure where that stands. I think they're becoming more happy with the way that he has played, although he wasn't great in the early part of the season. And honestly, I think he's been a little disappointing in his first year back. Maybe it's just getting reacclimated to the NHL. We can talk about the trade deadline. I suspect that will be a lot of it. We can talk GM search. We can talk whatever. Kirill Marchenko, a healthy scratch. He'll be back in the lineup tonight against Edmonton. Jake Bean will sit. It's all up to you. So hop on the stage, fire in some text messages, and we'll get going here. We'll go for about 45 minutes today. We will go first to the text messages. But for the people on stage, hang with me. That's Paul B., Ryan L., and William E. We will get to you. Let's get through a couple of the text questions first. Chris B. says, "Hi, Aaron. Hope you're doing well. Do you think Pascal's healthy scratch reasons are a little unbalanced? Do you believe the 7-day on Tuesday was really about scratching Marchenko or showcasing peak or both?" Well, so I kind of feel about this decision as I do about Juracek. I think it's 100% up to the coach, and he sees things that we don't see. And if he's gone over things with Marchenko and the mistakes keep happening, then this is what a coach does to get a player's attention. I don't have a problem with that. My only issue, and this isn't even an issue with Peak either, it's in giving yourself the best chance to win, because that is still their stated goal. They're not in tank mode. They've not been all season. You're 2 hours away from your minor league team, 2.5 maybe. There are several guys in Cleveland that are really playing well and really producing that could have come up to play top six roles. Now, Carson Myers having a really good season in Cleveland. He is not a classic top six, I'll grant you. Neither is Brendan Gaunce. But Trey Fitzwilliamski is, and he's I think he's fourth in the AHL in scoring. I really think it would have been a better approach to bring up a forward and play 12 forwards and 60 than to, I don't like 11-7. I never have. Pascal Vincent today said he doesn't like it either. It's a weird fit for the forwards. It's a weird fit for the D. And to your thing about showcasing Peak, here's where I come in on this. And again, this is nothing against Peak. I like Peak as a six, maybe a five, probably a seven on a really good team. I like him. I think if he has the right partner, you can play him. I don't think there's any scout in the league that doesn't know who Andrew Peak is. So for me, a showcase is for a player coming back from an injury or back into the lineup for the first time after recovering from something. And you want to see how he looks. So Jack Roslovic, 6 weeks ago when he came back into the lineup from the broken ankle, you want to see that. And it didn't look great at first. He looks fine now. He told me today that the All-Star break was really, really good for him in that regard, because it allowed for further healing. So I don't think there's any scout, A, that doesn't know Andrew Peak, or B, is going to base a trade or not a trade on what happened Tuesday in Pittsburgh. They know the guy. Sure, you want to see him. You want to see if he's healthy, all these things. But I don't think that Pascal would have done what he did to Kirill Marchenko just so that Peak could play. If you want Peak to play, I can find you a spot. No problem. Like, Boqvist sits, Peak goes in. Like, that's not hard. So I would think it's that. I think it was meant to be punitive to Marchenko. Talk to Marchenko today. He's pissed in a good way. I suspect you'll see a lot of energy from him tonight. So stay tuned. Should be a good game against Edmonton. Ed N. says, "Hey, Aaron, thanks for doing these." You bet, N. Ed. "I've been trying to stay in Vincent's corner, but playing 7D the other night broke me. They were in Pittsburgh. Why didn't they just call up someone from Cleveland for the day? His comment for playing Peak was worse than the Globetrotters comment." Yeah. The Globetrotters comment was a bizarre one. But the worst thing is, or not the worst thing, but to me, the funny part is none of the Russians, I'm guessing, have any clue who the Globetrotters even are. So that's lost on them. It was a little, he said it again today that it would have been really hard for him to justify calling up a player from Cleveland and telling Andrew Peak that he wasn't going to play. I guess my response to that is, these are forwards you'd be calling up, and Andrew Peak is a defenseman. The place you have a need on the roster is at forward, not on defense. I guess the other point to that would be it hasn't been hard for you to look Andrew Peak in the eyes and tell him he's not playing roughly 40 times this year. So sometimes I think the guys that go into the lineup are part of the messaging that's being done to the player that who's coming out. I remember John Tortorella would, I wouldn't say go out of his way, but if he had a young player up, he would love the opportunity if he felt a veteran wasn't emptying the tank for him on a nightly basis. He would love to give the young player that guy's spot and see how they respond to it. So sometimes it can be messaging in both ways. All right, one more text message, then we'll get over to the stage. Paul B., you are on the on-deck circle. Marcus M. says, is there a sense that they've narrowed the GM search / preferences? Marcus, I'm told they are not. That comes straight from John Davidson, that they have not narrowed it yet, that they're still in the collecting mode. The trade deadline is eating all of their time. I mean, the phone calls this time of year are outrageous, the number of them. So my understanding is that they have several dozen people that have expressed an interest in the job. They're not going to have any trouble finding, I think, a worthwhile candidate. It might be quite a tough decision, actually. And I think John Davidson has said it. They're looking for someone who has done the job or has been very close to the job for several years. So that is a GM or an assistant GM. That's what they want. They want experience. And, you know, I think, and he can't say this, he won't say this, because I don't think he, you know, there's no reason to put a bullet in someone's back on the way out the door. But I think the one thing that they're really interested in now is, they've done the drafting. They have to continue to draft. That's never going to stop anywhere, but especially in a smaller market like Columbus. That was Yarmo's calling card. Absolutely. This next general manager, I think it's pretty clear to them, needs to be about team building and needs to be about the big moves, the difficult moves that are coming. I don't want to say that anybody can do what the first steps of a rebuild are. That's probably not fair. But trading veterans for draft picks and loading up on draft picks and picking, now they've collected the players. Now comes the really difficult spot. Now comes, considering trading one of your young blue chippers that maybe can be tough for the previous GM and the new GM won't have a problem with it. Seeing if there are redundancies in your lineup, seeing if there are guys that, for whatever reason, you're just no longer sure are going to make it, and making that call, that can be tough. And that's where they're at now. Those are the next steps, because all these young guys. I like, we've said it before, the only sense of hope and joy this season, when compared to last season, is this wave of young players. The way Chinnikov has played, the way Voronkov has developed, Sillinger has emerged. It's been a tough year for Kent Johnson. He's now out for the season. But Fantilli was a bright spot for sure. I don't think he started skating yet, but he's part of the bright future here. What do you do with all those wingers? Like, can you keep them all? Can you keep them all? These are the tough decisions that the next guy's got to make. So, yeah, there you have it. Let's go to Paul B. Paul, you are on stage. Thanks for joining us. You're on front of Nationwide. Go ahead.
Hey, Porty, I appreciate it. How you doing?
Hey, man, doing all right. Thanks.
That's good. Well, hey, I haven't been in tuned with the Blue Jackets as much recently since the All-Star break. But it seems, I got to imagine by the timeline, but you kind of answered it, but I was thinking Fantilli would be coming back sometime in the near-ish future, probably sometime this month. And wanted to get your opinions on, kind of what you think they were going to do with them when they come back, because it seems like they've kind of settled on the four centers, Boone, Voronkov, Corrali, and Cole. And Cole certainly is thriving in that position right now. And so when Fantilli is ready to come back, if they get him back by the end of the year, You know, do they slot him in there? Do they put him in the wing? Do they send him to Cleveland for playoffs? What do you think they're going to do, and what do you hope they do?
So I don't know where he comes back in the lineup. Honestly, I would really like to see him play center. I'd like to see what it looks like with him in the middle and Boone on the wing, because I think that's where it's headed eventually. But I don't know. And as for when he returns, I'm hearing a lot of hopefully now. So I think the census is going to be, it's going to be a little while yet. To my knowledge, he's not started skating. So we're probably at least a couple weeks away now. I think when the injury happened, it was sort of mid to late March would be the return. So they go well into April this year. I think their last game is the 16th. So I think the plan is for him to still play again this year. But I can tell you this, he's not going to play again if there's any concern about his health. There's no reason to push it. I don't know where he comes back into the lineup. The Cleveland thing is interesting because I kind of flushed this out in the Sunday gathering. It's good to have Josh Flynn, the AGM, who's their CBA expert, around. The issue is they can't pay for him to the American Hockey League. Let me explain that real quick. On Friday, so tomorrow at 3:00, anyone who is eligible to play in the AHL for the postseason must be on an AHL roster tomorrow at 3:00. So I'll say this. At some point today, I'll tweet it, and it still won't be read by everybody. So there will be great panic. In CBJ land and in other markets where they send players to the AHL. They're on the roster at 3 p.m. And then an hour or so passes, maybe 5 minutes or so passes, and then they get immediately recalled to Columbus. So they're on the Cleveland roster. They can go there for the playoffs, but they're staying with the Blue Jackets. And people refer to that as papering the player to the American Hockey League because you don't actually, the player does not physically go. It's just paperwork. Now, as was explained to me this weekend, Fantilli cannot be put on the AHL clear list because he's injured. The only way a player who is injured at the time and can play for the AHL playoffs is if they have been on the NHL roster for less than 25% of the games. And it's already too late for that. So it looked, if the reading of this that I've gotten is accurate, and I believe it is, I don't think Fantilli can go to the AHL for the playoffs. The only thing they could do, and I don't know if I see the point of this, but maybe it's cool, maybe it'd be worth it, is they can send him to Cleveland on a conditioning assignment. But those can only last 6 days or three games. That opens another question that I've not been able to get an answer to. Can a team that's done playing, the Blue Jackets, as of April 16th, can you send a player to the minor leagues on a conditioning assignment? Because that's not in the spirit of a conditioning assignment. A conditioning assignment is for the player to get up to speed to resume play in the National Hockey League. Well, obviously, that's not the point. So I feel like it's unlikely that Fantilli is going to see any time in Cleveland this year. But it is a thought, and I wondered it too, because he's missed so much time now with the calf injury, if maybe that would be a consideration. But that's what we know.
A lot of moving pieces right there.
Yeah, always. The CBA is about 400 pages long. So.
Oh, goodness. I'm sure lawyers were involved with that. Of course. One other thing real quick, I may have missed it. Maybe you've talked about it in the past, but have we heard any updates on Patrick? How's he doing? Is he stateside? Yeah. Is he in Finland? Is he coming back this year? Any updates?
No, we're not going to get any updates either. That's part of the deal with the program, is that the reason for him being there is anonymous and there are no updates. It's not up to him when he returns. Now, the first step is, but he has to be cleared by the program to come back into the league. So he would be evaluated before that's possible. I haven't seen him. Out of respect for the situation, I've not tried to track him down. I know the team isn't gonna comment on it. It just is. He's in the program, and it kind of sits there until he's ready to come back. So I'm not even gonna guess, honestly, if we see him again this year or not. I don't see how that benefits anybody, because it would be nothing more than a guess. So I think that still everybody in Blue Jackets land is just on him getting where he needs to be and feeling better, first and foremost. Thanks for the questions, Paul. Let's go to Ryan L. Ryan L., you are on Front and Nationwide. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Porty. I got a question about maybe future roster building, what your opinion would be on it. I know we've talked in the past how this group is really light. You throw Johnny, KJ, Danforth, Dume is coming. And even though he's bigger, I'd throw Patty into that list just because he doesn't play big. He plays skill. How would you see this KJ thing working out for us in the long term? Do you think we can keep him if Dume comes up, or do we have to keep one or the other? Because I just don't see how this roster works if we have a Johnny, KJ, Dume, Danforth line up the wing.
Yeah, and to me, this is part of the tough. These are some of the tough calls that the next GM are going to make. To me, the question, because I think Dume is going to be here at some point. I don't think it's going to be as quick as maybe some people think. So I don't worry about that until he proves himself that he's for sure here. But for me, the most pressing one is becoming Kent Johnson and Johnny Gaudreau. And it's not even about their size necessarily. It's about the way that they play. They're actually pretty similar players. I think Gaudreau is a quicker accelerator than Johnson. Johnson's not quite as elusive as Gaudreau is. He's a little bigger than Johnny too. He's 6'1". He's not looking eye to eye to Gaudreau, but they're playmaking wingers, and that's kind of it can work. It's kind of an unusual. Most of the times the playmaking comes from the middle. So it's just kind of makes you unique that way. If both of your playmakers are on the left wing, again, it's not bad, but you know, can you have two sort of light playing left wingers on your top two lines? Does that make you too easy? I think they need more size. I mean, even Marchenko's a big guy, doesn't play a big rugged game. I think you're gonna see more of that from him when he when he gets up to speed and gets going. So that's cool. But he's probably a third line guy. I think Sillinger's starting to become more combative, which is good to see.
Agreed.
And I think they've got some depth guys coming, fourth line guys. Malatesta is a little, as one AHL coach said, a bastard. This kid that they signed, I don't know if he makes it or not, this Max McHugh from London is freaking nuts.
That was my next question. I haven't seen him play, crazy. But does he match that bigger size or plays big type of guy?
Well, he's not bigger like by measurables. Excuse me. He's not bigger by measurables, but he is. He goes 400 miles an hour, and as one scout said, well, as Basil McRae said, he's not a predator, but he's a hunter. And another scout said off the record, oh, no, he's a predator. He tries to harm people. He's one of those guys that is going to be constantly straddling the line and frequently going over the line with the league office if he makes it. And again, I say if he makes it, because drafted, not signed, and signed as a free agent, that's a hard road for guys to make. But we also can say this, he seems to be the type of player that you don't want to bet against. Or you would not be wise to bet against, because he is a motivated, driven player. And you know what? Depending upon how your team is made up, and you may need that some nights. I think you're going to see a different side of Juracek when he gets here and is up to speed, because he can be an imposing guy. He's been described, we don't see anything like this right now, but described as a Shea Weber type, which is scary as hell if you're on the other team. So I think that stuff is coming. But that is, you're right. It's part of the tough decisions that the next guy's going to have to make with the lineup. Like, Kent Johnson, a lot of people think is going to be a hell of a player in this league. When is the right time to strike? Do you just ride it out and let him take his game where he can take it and decide from there? Or do you make an early call and get creative with it? But that's what these guys are paid the big bucks to do. Ryan, thanks for the question. We'll stay on the stage. William E., you are next on Front of Nationwide. William, go ahead, please.
Hey, Porty. I have two quick questions.
Sure.
First one, can you explain the Ryan Johansson trade? I don't understand why you would put $8 million in the minors.
Yeah, well, what else did they get for that, Philly?
A first, but they gave up.
Yeah. So they're enhancing that. They're taking money from Colorado so that they can make that trade. And
but they gave up Sean Walker too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So Sean Walker alone maybe doesn't get the first. They take some of, and I think Johansson, half of his salary is still in Nashville. So it's probably $4 million that Philly's eating to get the first round draft pick. Philly is in they might make the playoffs, but they're in a rebuild mode and they are not going to sway from that. They're not going to sway from that. So that's the price to do in business right now. The Blue Jackets, by the way, have made it known to teams that they are willing to be a third party broker to help these deals get done, or to take on a contract if someone needs to move in order to swing another deal that they want in exchange for draft picks or prospects. So something else to look for, maybe not a roster player moving, but maybe the Blue Jackets getting creative between now and the deadline.
That's actually my next question. Is there like a value to each round of a draft pick? So like, if we're eating a $4 million contract, is that like kind of equal a first rounder?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. I don't think anybody has built a chart that really lays that out. Like, there's no assigned value necessarily. It's how desperate a team is for first round draft picks. It's how, where you think that pick might be. Does it have top 10 protection? Now, you know, chances are if Colorado's moving a pick, they're not going to end up picking in the top 10. But it's just sort of what the market prevails. There have been a couple. What was the deal last year? Columbus paid some astronomical figure for like a third or a fourth round pick. I mean, it's six figures, well into six figures. So first round draft picks are so valuable right now, and nothing is more valuable to some of these teams than cap space. But if you're Philly, you're loading up on these first. You're loading up because they're going to do this the right way, and they're going to stay competitive, I would suspect, because John Tortorella does not. You want to get a rise out of John Tortorella sometime. Throw the theory of tanking by him and maybe step back a step or two when you ask the question, because it's one of his favorite topics. And by favorite topics, I mean least favorite. But anyways, William, thanks for the questions. Do appreciate it. Let's step back to the chat room. Let's see. Where are we? Daniel H. Werenski and Bokvist seem like our only two good defenders. Branson has had so many brain farts the last couple of games, and the rest of the defensemen seem invisible. I guess more of a rant than a question. Hope you feel better, Daniel. The blue line is interesting. It is interesting. You would suspect, after putting the resources in that they did to get Provorov and Severson, that they would be a much better defensive team. Hell, I wrote it that they were going to be. I thought they'd give up 100 fewer goals. I think the other day I figured out they can give up about three more goals the rest of the season. So 20 games, not likely. It's been disappointing. There's no question. I will say this too, and it sounds maybe like blind optimism, but it can be tough for free agents their first year in a new city. And I don't think the Provorov, he's had as many brain farts in the defensive zone as anybody. I don't think it's out of the question to think that Provorov and Severson, if Provorov is still here next season, could be much better than they were this year. I think we wrote before the season started that this idea that this team was just going to come together and take off was a pipe dream. Like, there's so many new elements to this season that you kind of knew it was going to be a mess for a while. The new system, the new coach, two new centers, two new defensemen, Line A playing center, which he's never played before. I mean, we could go on and on with all that was like not just subtly new, like massively new. And that's kind of played out where it's taken them a long time to get the system. It's taken a long time for them to sort of learn how to play together. It's taken a long time for them to figure out how to handle leads. I'm not willing to say they have figured it out entirely yet, but they've certainly been better. So it's kind of a mess. I think they're going to make some changes again there over the summer. There's going to be some new blood. Juracek will be here next year. I hesitate to say this, but almost for sure. I think Matejczuk has the chance to be here next year. You know where I stand on Blankenberg. If the kid can stay healthy, I want him here too. So there could be a lot of new faces there. They need to get better defensively, and that's not just the defensemen. That's not just the forwards. That's the goalies. That's everybody. They're not a good defensive club. Teams take advantage of them and their youth and their inexperience and their inability. They're better this year, but they're not better enough. So Jonathan C. says, so Alex Nylander, how are you feeling about him? Any chance Bemstrom gets 6 goals? I texted John Davidson after the game the other night when Nylander had a hat trick and asked him, what do you get if Alex Nylander scores 6 goals? He said he's going to look back through the terms of the deal. Joking, of course. I think Nylander, I still want to see more. I don't mean more production. I want to see a more sustained stretch of play, because my understanding is he's done this before. Not a hat trick, but he's played really well in fits and starts. He's been in the AHL a long time. Maybe this opportunity is the motivation that he needs to sustain it. I'll be honest with you, in that game against Pittsburgh the other night, I didn't notice Emil Bemstrom at all, which to me, there are too many games like that in Columbus too. I think it's doubtful he gets to 6. I also think that if he's at 5 and the Penguins aren't going to make the playoffs, there's no way Kyle Dubas is going to have Bemstrom turn a 6th round pick into a 3rd. But if they're in it and he's playing well, I think you don't rule that out. It would take a hell of an uptick here for Bemstrom, but he's done it before, and he tends to do it at the end of the season, frustratingly. Patrick R. says, how much needs to happen for CBJ fans to have reasonable hopes for playoffs in 25? Well, you know, how much has to happen? The young guys have to pop. I think some of them have started to do that this year, or are on the cusp of doing it. The Minnesota has traded Duhame, by the way. It looks like he's going to Colorado. Michael Russo with the first part, Elliot Friedman with the second. So to me, I wouldn't feel right suggesting that there's something they could do to make the playoffs. It is a wild league, though. I mean, again, look at Philly this year. Look at Nashville in the West. They've got to fix the room. They've got to get a sort of a more driven collection of players, or turn these guys into more of that, where losing isn't. I don't think anybody enjoys it, but I think at times it can be too easily accepted. They've got to get through that. I think these guys just growing up will help that. I think there are changes to be made. I think you're going to see some different looks at goaltender. I think the blue line's going to look a lot different. And I think the forwards are going to shuffle a little bit too. I'm very curious to see what the new GM looks like and how aggressive he is. So, to me, Patrick, the goal in 25 is what the goal should have been this year. Instead of telling people playoffs, which was absurd, the goal should be playing meaningful games in March. So, you know, it'd be great if they made the playoffs. I want to see them in late March, early April, on the line, battling for it. So that's what I would say. Let's see here. Oh, somebody asked me, I'm not sure if that was in the chat, if this was in the podcast about Jared Bull going to a, he goes to like a watch in his hand, a pocket watch. Bull did get back to me. He said, nothing too cool. I wish I could say I was timing how fast he gets a shot off. But it's just a stopwatch for shift length. Early on, guys' shifts were way too long, so I started tracking them. That's it. So whoever asked that question, I hope that helps. Actually, you know what? Bull, it's a question that was posted on the Monday Win, comment section of the Monday Win over Vegas on the Athletic site. So maybe I'll go back and hit that guy directly. Let's see here. Troy Stecker traded. Andrew K says, with all the pending RFAs, who do you think will get the biggest deal? And who do you think the Jackets might not extend or trade rights? Well, most of the RFAs, I mean, if you're looking at the young cluster of talent, those guys who are RFAs are definitely going to get extended. I think the jury's still out on Nylander, to be honest with you. And the new GM is not here yet. And when the new GM comes in, that's one of the questions that I think bears asking. Is he a, you know, pick the guys you think you're going to build around and send them to long-term deals? Or do you want to do what they've done, bridge deals so that they expire when they're still RFAs? And then that third contract is the big one. That's something that the new GM will likely help make the call on. So hard to say at this point. Brett S. says, do you believe a desperate team could come calling on Jenner still? And how aggressive would a team have to be to actually make JD pull the trigger? Well, I don't think he can do it now. He has said he's not trading Boone Jenner. I really think it would be hard for him to go back on that. So, I mean, it would have to be something stupid. Two firsts and a great prospect, I think, to even think about it. And I'm not sure it should be that high. Nothing against Jenner. But I do think this for a room that is trying so hard to put something together that looks like it can be a winning culture in the NHL, that's a risky move, trading your captain, especially if your captain's Boone Jenner. Mike G, what is your favorite restaurant in Columbus? Oh boy. You know where I was last night and a couple of guys from Edmonton and I met out. It's not a five-star by any stretch. It's a wonderful place. The Mohawk down in German Village. It's like, it always feels like you're in the most comfortable recliner of a restaurant in Columbus. It's like your uncle's den or something. It's a wonderful place. Great food, great atmosphere. I got a lot of great restaurants, though. Favorite places in Columbus. Love Barcelona. Really good spot. What's the place up on Bethel, the French place, that's quite pricey? Great spot. For casual food, the Tip Top Kitchen, currently under construction, has always been a good spot. I think the Pot Roast Sandwich is one of the best sandwiches in Columbus. Katzinger's Deli is incredible down in German Village. There's a ton of places. The Refectory. Good spot. Very good spot.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Joe S. says, Pascal Vincent preaches accountability and playing to a standard. Seems like that is only applied to the younger players on this team and not the veterans. Goodbranson scores an own goal and doesn't miss a shift. Do you think there's a double standard? Well, listen, I will defend Goodbranson on the own goal. That is one of those bad luck bounces. Now, I don't like a clear that close to the net, especially with a Penguins player right there. You're asking for trouble. But that, to me, that's not an error of effort. And I forget what the game was a couple before, where he's in his own end and the puck hops over his stick. He doesn't get the clear. Turnover, goal. Didn't like that either. The puck was rolling on him. I mean, there's a smarter play there to just swat it out of the zone rather than try to control it and make the perfect pass. But I think, you know, I will say this, Pascal Patrick Laine. That's a veteran. He benched him. I mean, he healthy scratched him. He benched Damon Severson in the third game of the season. Can you imagine how the GM felt about that? Here's the guy we signed to an 8-year contract. And in game three, you're sitting him for an entire third period. Johnny Gaudreau was benched for a period. So I don't think it's fair to say that he only goes after the young guys. I don't think that's fair at all. Brett asked us, do you think CBJ makes any waiver claims on the guys from yesterday? I don't. I didn't see any names there that piqued my interest. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, and that's not coming from anybody, but I don't anticipate that. Chris J says, with the way the defense was constructed this season, was it because of Babcock hiring? Do they hire a GM before the end of the season, after the trade deadline, or will it be off the offseason? Any talk of the Blue Jackets being a broker in a trade? Okay, we're going to go one by one here. So Babcock, here's the timeline. I cannot say definitively that the Blue Jackets brought in Provorov and Severson or both because of Mike Babcock, but there is suspicion to that end. Babcock told the Blue Jackets no initially. They then made the Severson and Provorov deals, and Babcock told them yes. When I met with Babcock before the season, I posed that very question to him. I said, you told the Blue Jackets that you were not interested in the job. They made the deals to acquire Severson and Provorov, and then you told them yes. Was you taking the job incumbent on them fixing the blue line? And he gave me a look, a stern look, which Mike Babcock is known for when he doesn't want to answer a question. And he said, I'm not answering that question. Okay. I rephrased it and he said, I'm not answering that question. Okay. So we moved on. Sometimes a non-answer is an answer, but that's why I say I can't say for certain that that is the case. There is reason to believe. Do they hire a GM before the end of the season? I don't think that will happen, Chris, because if you think about it, there are going to be some executives that will be working. Some are AGMs. There's some people they'll be able to talk to before the end of the season who are not currently working with the team or whose team has given them permission to talk. Some of these guys are going to be so caught up in their seasons that they're not going to deal with it until after the season. So if they hire a GM before the end of the season, they may be limiting their pool of applicants, which I don't think would be wise. So my guess is that it will be offseason. And finally, you say, any talk of the Blue Jackets being a broker in a trade? Yes, they're willing to do that. I don't know if they'll get it done, but they are willing to do that. Let me put this on mute for a second and clear my nose, and I'll be right back to you. Okay, Philip Hayes says, I've noticed that Voronkov gets a similar number of shifts starts as other centers, but ends up with far less TOI. Any insight into why the Russian line might end up with shorter shifts? I'm not sure if that is the directive. It's a good question. If it is consistently that way, it makes sense that it could be a directive to get off. I think they, I'd have to look. I think they may get a high a percentage of offensive zone starts. That's my sense. And so maybe that impacts, maybe they don't want them out there in defensive mode much. But, I mean, that's not an easy thing to map that way. I think they have been stressing shorter shifts all season because some of these guys were getting a little ridiculous early in the season. Most coaches want before 40, between 45 and 50 seconds. I saw Bedard had like a 250 the other night. But it's a good question, Philip. I'll poke around and see if there's anything behind that. Will D says, look like CBJ are heating up at the end of the season, per usual. But is that as much of a problem this year as it has been in the past? I saw Buchagross tweet that we are ruining our chances for a top draft pick. But is that as big a deal this year, or do you think stringing some wins at the end of the season is what the group needs right now to grow as a team? Well, I was all in Team Tank last year with the batch that was available. At some point, it has to be about winning games. I felt last year with the team being so gutted with injuries, with the season being so hopeless, that it made sense to acknowledge that this is not your year, that this is, you're aiming for the draft pick, not for a couple of spots in the standings. To me, this year is different. You've got a lot of young pieces already here. I'm not saying you don't need a draft pick. You do. And I can promise you on the other side of the trade deadline, there's going to be a lot more talk about the lottery and where the Blue Jackets stand and who's available. But at some point, the losing culture has to become a winning culture. And I'm not one that believes, I've gone over this a bunch, I think. I don't believe that how you finish one season impacts the next. I just don't. And Ken Hitchcock never believed it. John Tortorella didn't believe it. Those guys know more about hockey than I do. It's just too long a gap. What you achieve in April when there's no pressure on you does not still sustain the following October. It just doesn't. It's too long a gap. And so much changes during the offseason too anymore. So I think at the same time, I think winning can help them in the short term to taste victory, to feel that, to know what the cost is to do it in and out every night. Very important. And they got to get there at some point. We'll take a few more here. Jeremy V says, is there any reason why Fantilli hasn't gone on IR? They would have needed to make a roster move to call some up to replace Marchenko. Yeah, so Jeremy, he hasn't gone on IR because he hasn't had to. There's no real benefit to going on IR. If they need the roster spot, it's something they can do in the span of 5 minutes. Put him on IR, and they can even retro, if he's close to coming back, they can even retro date it to when he last played, when he got injured. So it's not really an issue. They don't need the roster spot, so why put him on IR? If they needed it, they could have. If they wanted to recall any of the guys from Cleveland we talked about, they could have easily put him on IR. And even, you know, he's got to miss 2 weeks, I think it is, when they go on IR, 10 days. And I don't think he'll be back in 10 days, but even if he is coming back imminently, then they can retrodate it to when he went out. Vegas continues to make moves, stockpile needs, and generally seems to run circles around most in the league. Is there any GM that could possibly be hired to increase the ownership desire to win? Can they change the overall management culture to winning? I mean, the GM helps. It's part of the direction of the franchise. Absolutely. Yeah, sure. And how bold they're willing to be. Look what Bill Zito has done in Florida. Now, he certainly came there with some nice pieces, but he has made some big, big moves to get a Stanley Cup done there. Alex D says, hey, Aaron, what are your thoughts on Ryan Johansson being put on waivers in Philly? Is he that bad? Or is it a character issue? You know what? I don't think, to me, Ryan Johansson is battling through. I think he's had some injuries that have taken a toll. I don't think he's going to need some lucky breaks or some big turnaround in the next year or so to really get back to where he was. It just feels like there's a lot of tread off those tires, if I'm being honest. Good, real good kid. And you saw how good he could be at his best here in Columbus. MVP of the All-Star game, 70-some points 1 year as a young player. Really talented guy. Marcus R. says, just curious, why don't teams get a cap break if a player is in the player assistance program? I ask because the LTIR rules really seem broken. I was curious why it doesn't apply to the player's assistant program. It seems like the NHLPA could grant cap space if the situation allows. Yeah, it's a good question. Maybe there's a better way to handle it. I know part of the program, they're insistent, and it is this way, and it's good, that the player continues to get paid while he's in it. So I think that's part of the rub. Like, insurance can cover an injured player. I believe it's if they miss 40 games or more. But the player is still paid, even though he's in the player's assistance program. I think there's a lot of tweaks they could do to make this game better. I've always felt too that players, I feel like there should be like a 20% cap hit relief for players that you drafted and have stayed with you since you drafted them. So in other words, when Pickett, Marchenko, Yachinikov, any of those guys, when they sign their next contract, they get the money that they signed for, obviously. But the cap hit on the Columbus is like a 20 or 25% deduction. And that rewards teams for building teams. Now, it also would severely limit the trade market. So maybe I should rethink that. Because teams, if they're getting a 25% salary cap allowance for their own player, may not be so eager to trade. Jeff B says, is there any chance KJ is not ready for training camp? I don't suspect that's going to be an issue, Jeff. He's having surgery at some point this week, perhaps today. And then I think on the other side of that, they'll have a more of an idea as to what the recovery is going to look like. But everything I've heard is that he should be ready to go for next year. Chris J says, do you feel they have drafted too small, KJ, Brindley, Dumé? I don't. I mean, Brindley was the second-round pick. Johnson was a first-round pick. All of those guys, that's where they were slotted. Dumé was a later-round pick, third round, I want to say. You take great players, and you don't know where this is going to go with these guys. Like, Brindley is a smaller guy. He doesn't play small. And you look ahead to, like, a Brindley, Malatesta, McHugh line, if McHugh can make it. They could have some serious energy at the bottom of their forward group. Fantilli is still in the 23-man roster. Is he technically injured? Yes, he is. Calf injury. Johnny H says, Porty, would you consider doing a piece about the team Kepi? I have so many questions. Is there a master list kept somewhere of all-time Kepi awardees? Whoa, that's awesome. How often is it washed, if ever? That's the question my wife is just completely hung up on. Since it seems to fit some guys poorly, what size is it? I guess men in Civil War times had smaller heads. Has it ever been lost? What happens if the guy who has it gets traded? I have many more. Okay, Johnny, you know what? Post-deadline Kepi story. How stanky is that thing? Where has it been? What stories does it have to tell? I know it has been lost. It's only handed out after wins, and there was one rather, unfortunately, comedic moment. I don't think it was earlier this year, but maybe it was last, where they went through a dreadful losing streak, and when they finally won, nobody could find the Kepi. It had been a while. All right, we're going to go rapid fire here the rest of the way. I'll be ready to talk about the team again when it's time for the draft. What are your thoughts on the new Avid Brothers single? Any hopes, thoughts regarding the upcoming album? Yeah, Sam, I like it. I'm fired up. I'm curious to see where they go. They need some new music. I'm a little, I don't know, heartbroken, pissed off. I'm supposed to go to Mexico and hear them in early April. And that just isn't going to be possible. So boohoo for me, but we'll see him here in Columbus and hopefully get back to Mexico again in future years. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's always
you get the record in the mail, the album in the mail, you sit down at the record player and you listen to it through a few times with the lyrics and let it sink in. Great band. Great band. Do you see the progress that Vincent is trying to implement despite our record not showing it? I do see this team making progress. You know, Austin, it's a fair question. It's a good question. I do. It's hard, I think, for anybody to say that Chinnikov is the same player now that he was at the start of this year or the end of last year. He's gotten better. It would be hard for me to say that Cole Sillinger is not a better player. He's a better player. He looks like an impact player now most nights. That's good news. Voronkov, I think, has gotten better. Looks quicker. So you don't have to understand the moves that the man is making all the time. That's his prerogative. I do think full marks, you have to recognize that some guys have in fact gotten better. Evan C says, do you think Pascal Vincent will make it through next season because of a new GM will be evaluating the roster and ownership? Won't be paying 3 to 4 head coaches at the same time. Evan, if I'm Pascal, I'm a little uncertain about my future right now. And I think everybody in the organization is because of the new GM. That's like when you work in a political office and your guy at the top of the party does not get reelected. It can be very unsettling. So we'll see who they hire. If he's got a guy, what they're thinking. I think everybody's on notice. Joshua B says, does Davidson stick around after a new GM is hired? Well, I asked him that very question last week for the Sunday gathering. And he said he is going to stick around until this thing gets up and running as he wishes. So I think there are some who wouldn't be surprised if he retired this summer, 71 years old. But he says, no, he's going to see this through. All right, we're going to end it with this. Don B., you are on stage. You get the last word here on the Front Nationwide podcast. Go ahead, please.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller. And thinking, it's my opinion, and tell me if you agree, that I think Pascal gets just a little bit too much flack from our fan base. Like we've talked about, Boone Jenner playing too many minutes, this and that, but we just talked about how certain players are improving and there is some light at the end of this tunnel, and just, gauging the fan base, and, Twitter is what it is. You can't take it all for what, do you think the fans are too hard on him?
Well, I won't say that. I think when you're this bad and you've been in this spot for a few years, I don't think anybody escapes criticisms. I wouldn't say I take issue with some of the decisions that have been made. I just find several of them interesting and I make note of that. That's how I look at it.
Sure.
But I think people are well within their rights to be angry with the players, angry with the team, angry with the GM, the owner, the president, the trainers, the media. Bring it. Certainly that last group has nothing to do with the results or the day-to-day operation. But in times like these, I'm certainly not going to tell people how to feel or who to blame. Boone Jenner, my opinion, should not be playing over 20 minutes a night. Some of these guys in a season like this should not be playing 11 minutes a night. They should be playing more. This is such a rich opportunity to teach people. Like, you sat the Russian line against Carolina, and that is a difficult team to play against. That is something you have to get used to. And you lost that game. You weren't going to win that game when you sat them. Now you've missed an entire opportunity, 6-8 shifts that they could use. They're going to face this team 4 or 5 times a year as a fellow Metros. So if they're dogging it, sit them. Absolutely. But if they're struggling with the play, no, get out there. And this is when you work out the kinks. This is when you get used to the speed. And I don't like, I said this before, like the Blue Jackets played against Edmonton And at no point did Fantilli line up opposite McDavid. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. Yurecek was a healthy scratch against Edmonton. Now, the first time he's not playing tonight, obviously he's not with the team. The next year, it will be his first time facing McDavid. And that is a different player that you got it, especially as a defenseman. You have to get used to having a different gap against him because of that incredible speed. He doesn't know that now. He's missed an opportunity. This tonight's the second one to learn that. And I just, in a lost season like this, and it is, they can say they're playing for wins all they want, but there's no shot of making the playoffs. I think you should be using these games to the maximum benefit of the future. But he disagrees, and I've said it before, I'll say it again. He has forgotten more about hockey in the NHL than I'll ever know. He's been at it 30 years. So full marks. I think, again, a lot of players have gotten better under his watch this year. That is indisputable to me. But I think it's also fair and right when his team is losing like this to point out these things that don't at surface level make sense. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We made it all the way to the 2 o'clock hour. We did it again. We'll be with you next week to discuss all of the moves or non-moves at the trade deadline. We can talk about anything that happens the rest of the way here. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks for listening. Always a pleasure. And thanks so much for the questions. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.